This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program. Lose more at weightwatchers.com.
At 6 months, participants in a clinical trial of Weight Watchers program lost an average of 12 pounds.
So today's guest was coming by to talk about a whole lot of gay shit is a filmmaker, creator, and entrepreneur who decided he wasn't going to wait for Hollywood to open the door. He built his own. From growing as a digital creator to producing films and series that center authentic Black LGBTQ plus stories, he's now the founder of HD Productions Network, an independent streaming platform giving queer storytellers ownership and creative freedom. So what made you decide to launch your own streaming platform instead of just continuing on YouTube? Because that's kind of where we're at.
In 2014 is when I started my very first YouTube. In 2017, I had an underground male stripper show called Lit the Series that came out that, I guess it was before its time, on our premiere day. We were like promoting. They snatched me down with 30,000. The weight he carried, we were filming the final season of Blue Vante, which I was talking to you guys about. And in that final season, it was very mental health coded, that final season. It was about my character, Keyvante, who had lost his boyfriend. I think for Black men in general, because if you look on social media, everything is so, oh, he's sassy, or oh, yes, he's showing too much emotion. Oh, so you can't even piss without being sassy. You can't even sit down and wipe your ass. Oh, you wiping your ass with tissue? Oh, that's sassy. Yeah, well, damn, what can we do? What can y'all do?
Hey, what's going on? It's Boss Britt, the most lit.
What's up? It's your girl, DJ Excel.
And this is
the No Homo Show.
Where everything we talk about
is homo as f***. Hold up. Let's go.
Hey, what's going on? It's Boss Britt, the most lit.
What's up? It's your girl, DJ Excel.
And this is
the No Homo Show.
Where everything we talk about
is homo as f***.
Gay. What's up, gabies? Welcome back to the No Homo Show. Make sure y'all turn on y'all post notifications. Big ups to everybody that's watching us right now on our Patreon. And make sure you download the Patreon app for the best experience. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Shout out to everybody locked in through Apple or Spotify podcast. Y'all know to get the best experience, like Boss Britt said, is to join us on Patreon. Support the crew. Period. All right, plus we got behind the scenes. We got an Apple Music playlist on the No Homo Show Patreon, where there's a lot of queer artists that are making hits out here. Y'all need to listen to them, all right? Yeah. But shout out to everybody. We got another dope episode for y'all.
Yeah, so let me go ahead and get into our very special guest today, okay? So today's guest was coming by to talk about a whole lot of gay shit is a filmmaker, creator, and entrepreneur who decided he wasn't going to wait for Hollywood to open the door. He built his own. From growing as a digital creator to producing films and series that center authentic Black LGBTQ plus stories, he's now the founder of HD Productions Network, an independent streaming platform giving queer storytellers ownership and creative freedom. Through projects like The Weight He Carried, he's telling emotionally driven stories about identity, masculinity, healing, and accountability. Today, we're getting into his journey as a creator, the vision behind his storytelling, and what it takes to build your own platform. Gabies, please welcome to the No Homo Show, Corey Nye.
Yes, sir.
What's up?
What's up, y'all? Thank y'all for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being here. You know, we be doing our little research and, you know what I mean, trying to come across new people. And I believe I came across you. I think I saw you posted on a blog. I think it was maybe Hollywood Unlocked or something. Okay. And it was talking, you like, I'm always posting on the blog.
Right.
And it was talking about just your film. And then I started looking into you and I was like, okay, that's interesting. So we like to have men up here as well sometimes. We have a lot of females that are up here. Okay. So we like, let's go ahead and get one of our fellas up here.
Well, I'm here.
You representing for the man. You got to hold it down, Corey.
No, I will.
Welcome to the No Homo Show. How you feeling today?
I'm feeling really great. Thank y'all for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being here.
So how we start off is with a game called Skittles and Riddles, all right?
Okay.
So it's a gay riddle. Usually it's towards like lesbians, but we gonna it's it's gonna do what it do, because the answer probably gonna piss us off anyway. So you're gonna read the Skittle. If you get it wrong, you're taking a shot. Are you drinking today?
Yes, he's drinking.
I'm already drinking.
Okay. All right, so if you get it wrong.
It's in the back.
Oh, okay.
In a shot glass.
Surprise!
Surprise!
And you got you a little shot too?
I sure do.
Okay. So read the riddle, and let's see if we can figure it out.
I'm queer representation, but once the show ends, it's a riddle?
Yeah.
I'm queer representation, but once the show ends, I disappear.
I feel like this is right up your alley, you know what I mean? Storytelling, what you be doing. I don't give you hints.
Right.
I'm queer representation, but once the show ends.
Corey, if you read it one more time, it ain't gonna help you. It ain't gonna help you, man.
Sometimes you gotta be like.
Process it, huh?
You gotta say a word a little different. Queer representation. I know the answer, so I can't participate. You got a guess?
I do got a guess, but I don't think it's the answer.
Don't say vibrator.
I'm not. This one doesn't have nothing to do with that. I was going to say a drag queen.
Okay.
Because, you know, they dress up in drag, but they're not, like, always women, you know?
Hmm.
He's really thinking. You don't even gotta think that hard, Corey.
The answer I had, I don't want to say because of Cheddar's.
Just what say. It? Corey, you ain't got it. You ain't got it. Sometimes we just gotta be real with ourselves.
Yeah, I'm gonna say I don't get it because I don't want to say what I'm thinking in my
head. If you got an answer, you gotta say the answer that you got in your head.
What number is that? 2, by the way.
41.
Okay. What's your answer?
It's a safe place.
Is it really?
It really is. You want a gay place? You want to be?
I was gonna say trans because you transition back. You can do so many different things. But if your career representation, once the show ends, you can transfer back to whatever you want to do, whatever you're doing.
Okay,
before.
That's a good guess. I can't participate because I know the answer. Oh, okay. I cut these ones right. So
you said 41.
Y'all have very good guesses.
Okay. I was thinking too much.
On a good track. Y'all are on a good track.
Okay. The answer is the token gay character on TV.
Really?
You should have known that. You are a film.
Right. I said, it's right up your alley.
I don't do token gay characters.
True.
Thank you.
The gays are the main character with him.
Yeah, I love that.
You know what? I do love that. That was a great response. But since you did get it wrong.
Mm-hmm. Shot a clock. Salud.
Ooh.
Shout out all my gabies out there. Take a shot with us. Yeah. What you drinking?
Red Bull. Sugar free. I am not living life on the edge, y'all. What the hell?
Ooh. Yeah, that was
the way my life set up. I'm going to have to take a shot soon.
Yes, I can't wait.
Not like that, bitch. I'm going through it. That's what I meant.
Oh, I'm like, yes, come back. Well, welcome to the show, Corey. Now that we got that out the way, we're just going to do a quick little prelude so we can talk about what we're going to be discussing today.
Okay.
So today we're going to talk about your journey from digital creator to filmmaker and now launching your own streaming platform with HD Productions Network. Congrats on that, by the way.
Thank you.
We're also going to be getting into the inspiration behind the way he carried, the importance of telling authentic queer stories, and how you're navigating the film industry as an independent creator. And of course, we're also going to talk about representation in film, internet drama, and some conversations happening in the culture right now.
Okay.
We're going to get your perspective on it. But we can't move forward without getting your coming out story. So please let us know who, what, when, where, how was it for you coming up out that closet?
I don't even think I just kind of did it, but it was in my own way. I was on this dance team in Memphis. It's called Memphis Elite, and we were really big on themes. So like wherever we went, and just for clarity, back in 2009, when Single Ladies came out, when Beyonce did the Single Ladies video,
yes,
we were mentioned in an article as one of the underground squads that they basically got the references from. So basically, like what we would do in underground clubs, we got that from like the majorettes, the majorette world, the HBCU world, and then we in turn went underground and made it our own and came up with our own choreography. So what you saw Single Ladies do in 2009, there was an article that came out and gave us a shout out. So when that happened, we really like really started living in our truth. And so like mm-hmm. the uniforms like went from like your regular halter tops or like your majorette with sequins and fringe to like, we did this wedding theme where the time I was the captain and I was the bride, and the second row were the bridesmaids and the third row was the groomsmen.
Uh-oh.
And it went so viral. And the same weekend we did a McDonald's uniform and Ricky Smiley posted it and it just kept going viral. So I didn't get a chance to like come out to my family. They actually saw it because of social media back in like 2012, 13, when they were just posting everything, and everything that we wore was like a viral sensation. So like all the straights were posted just to get a moment, and then we had to be there left to defend ourselves and whatever that magnitude looked like. But that's how I ended up coming out, because I was the bride on the I was the captain, and my mom was out of town that weekend. And so when they got to them, they were like, what did you do this weekend? I was like, she already saw it. So why she asked? So just, it's a dance team. It's not a real wedding, blah, blah, blah. And so that's how it came out. And so I never really got a chance to say, hey, I'm gay, I'm blah, blah, blah. Just moms know, folks know. So it was already that. But I didn't feel comfortable until I was grown with my own production company, making my own decisions and could fend for myself, until I felt really like, okay, well, that's me. That's what I do. And that's what I am, who I am. What is
right.
What's next? And so that's just kind of how I came. It was really funny, but I didn't get a chance to sit down and say, oh, I'm gay and this is how I've been feeling. No, it was done by Ricky Smiley and all the other people who was just sharing it on Facebook and Instagram, and that is how it just came about.
Damn.
Yeah.
Did they know you was on the dance team? That might have been a hint.
No, that was just everything, because I was
I didn't even know about that.
I'm from Nashville, Tennessee, so okay. I went to college. When I turned 18, I moved to Memphis because that's where I went to college.
Okay.
So I went to undergrad and grad school there, so I was there at least a good 10 years. So when all that was, like, literally, I was born and raised in Nashville, but Memphis, like, raised adult me.
I feel that.
Got you.
Yeah.
And how were your parents? Because we always hear like men have it a little bit harder coming out and stepping into their truth as far as coming out the closet mm-hmm. per se. So how were your parents? Were they accepting, or were they
just mom, dealing? Single mom.
Okay, your
raised
mom.
Two kids, put two kids through college by herself. So it
period.
She Hello? Really No, she didn't. I mean, they already like parents already mothers already know. So
they
like
do,
there was
know.
Just really they just waiting on you to tell them.
Right.
So I was grown as hell then too. So it just, I don't know.
How old were you?
23.
Oh, okay,
24.
Okay.
So I was grown.
Because you was on the dance team in college.
Yes.
Okay.
But it wasn't a college dance team.
Yeah.
It was an underground LGBTQ team, but I was also on that team while in college.
So, got you. Yeah.
Okay.
Got
so
you.
I was doing like the dance team on campus with the straights and the Greeks and all those other things, and then nighttime after 10 p.m.
Okay,
period.
No, because we had like a gay dance team where I'm from, and they was tearing it up.
Me too. The dance teams used to, and y'all knew y'all was the shit. Y'all getting like,
and I ain't gonna lie, like the boys,
yeah, ate that shit up.
Yeah, like
where you from?
I'm from Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania, okay, yeah. Okay, yeah. So
like, yeah, like. They went hard, so I know.
Yeah.
But you know, the crazy thing is, we be talking about, like, social media. People don't realize, like, when you post something, you just think you posting it for laughs, and you really low-key outed somebody.
Yeah. And you know what's Damn. So funny about you saying Ricky Smiley, you said he reposted it. I just recently heard Duran, what's his last name? Yes. Mm-hmm. He said that's kind of his first viral moment, too. He had made a parody song, and Ricky Smiley kept reposting it, and that kind of boosted him. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what algorithm Ricky Smiley on, but Ricky Smiley. Let us come over there with you.
Yeah, I think that's, like, we were raised on Comic View. We were raised on Time
Warner
Morning Show. We were raised, so, like, those morning shows, those guys who have those platforms, you got to think. Our parents were the main listeners when we were getting dropped off when we were younger.
That's
so
a fact.
It trends down to our generation. So
yeah.
Of course it was going to go viral. It reached like so many millions in the matter of hours, and no matter what we said, this is the dance team. They didn't care. They just thought it was a wedding, and like, they didn't see nothing else. And then when the McDonald's uniform came out, it was just even worse. It's the red, white stripes, and we were from Memphis, so we had the M.
Oh, yeah.
Representing Memphis with the yellow booty shorts.
I gotta go back
and
look. Yeah.
And baby, we were on Galveston Beach, and it was just, it was a.
Y'all was on Galveston? I've been there.
It was for Houston Splash.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. So Galveston, a rough little beach, though, right? Like, or when I went, that shit was rough. I was like, this the beach.
It ain't no South Beach.
Right. I'm like, this ain't a little hard.
Yeah, a little crunchy, but you know.
Shout out to Galveston, no shame, but I definitely was
beach
like,
the Houston, beach.
Yeah, yeah. I love Galveston, but yeah, it ain't no South Beach, no Malibu.
Yeah. Shout out to Riggs Valley, because that's I think that's just ironic, because I literally just heard that story from Duran and then now you. So shout out to Riggs Valley.
He was out in a lot of us then.
Right, for real. He was out to everybody. So let's get into building HD Productions Network. So what made you decide to launch your own streaming platform instead of just continuing on YouTube? Because that's kind of where we're at, not necessarily like a whole network, but our show was on YouTube and we just experienced being shadow banned and being censored. And then now with the new administration, I know now for sure they are censoring us even more when it comes to the type of topics that we're talking about as far as queer topics, even the name of our show, No Homo Show, like we've just experienced that. So for you personally, what made you switch over from just like posting on YouTube to like making a whole streaming platform?
I'm glad you asked me that. In 2017, 2014 is when I started my very first YouTube. In 2017, I had a underground male stripper show called Lit the Series that came out that I guess it was before its time. And it was giving P-Valley. It really wasn't nudity, but it was just exposing what like really happens in Atlanta with the underground male stripping world, where you got drugs, sex, freedom of to do whatever, and then you're still having to live your livelihood, and how does that look like with money-wise. Sometimes you have to escort, sometimes you have to do certain things, and so it was just before its time. And YouTube, on our premiere day, we were like promoting. They snatched me down with 30,000 subscribers, and I had to start up from scratch.
They took the whole page down, not even just the video.
Whole channel.
Dang.
And I remember we were having a screening at my place, and I stepped outside and I cried for like 20 minutes, and I just didn't know what to do, because you got to think, we spent all this time and we have all this, this whole season, 7 episodes, and the first day it gets snatched down. So I had no choice but to just start over, because the same way that I got 30,000, it's not hard to start over, but just thinking that back then this was my beginning day, so I didn't have external hard drives, I didn't back things up.
Content too.
Lost all of that, started over, and now I'm at 99,000.
Okay.
Hello.
So
for me, YouTube pays cents on the dollars, because now that I'm doing AVOD, like with Tubi, Amazon Prime, I'm learning what the pay is, like how pay is broken down when it comes to like YouTube or any type of ads that's being placed. Mm-hmm. And with YouTube, they were taking like 55%. And like I had million, like all of my Living for the Weekend episodes had over 1 million views, and I'm barely making $400 or $500, where on Tubi, LGBTQ urban niche is like the top number one performing genre that gets paid out a lot of the it's called cost per mile, so CPMs.
Okay.
And the RPMs, which is the rate per mile. So basically it tells
per
you
minute.
How much. So basically I was like seeing, working with my distributors, like how much money I will be getting from all of my shows. And I'm like, oh my God. And YouTube was really playing with me. So I left YouTube, like, and not left them, but I use YouTube as like a promotion engine. Okay. So whenever I have stuff coming out, I'll promote there, because it's already 99,000 subscribers there. So they're going to get the email, they're going to get the notification. And then now that I've launched my streaming platform, the reason why I did that is because I'm seeing what numbers that I could possibly be bringing in if I put my stuff out on Tubi. But because I'm the sole owner, this is my creativity, there's no other producers.
Yeah.
What does that look like with my own streaming platform? And started that back in 2019, and it was okay, but it didn't do what I needed it to do, and the company that I had it powered through, they not bankrupt, but they leveled out, and for 3 years I didn't have anything. So like all of my content, I have like 12 shows, like movies, whatever, and it was just sitting on my hard drive. And so I was like, what do I do? So then a distributor found me, and they were like, you can, you know, let's do distribution. I was like, what is distribution? They were like, oh, honey, you don't even know what distribution is. Like, you're sitting on so much money because you own everything. And I was like, well, what does that look like? And they sent it to me, showed me everything. I sent things over, and I was like, wow. So I was just like, well, let's just say if I have YouTube, YouTube is a promotion engine. Let's say if I have my own streaming platform where everything goes here first, like the movie theaters, and then once it does its 60, 90-day cycle, I can send it to distribution to go to Roku, go to Tubi, go to Amazon Prime, go to you know, Apple TV, wherever, to get more money after the money that I feel like I have made all of my money on that from distribution. I mean, from my own streaming platform, like in-house, and then I send it to distribution and then make more money from it, and then just keep on, like, just keep doing it. And when I realized how much money there was to be made, I left YouTube alone. Like, that is highway robbery.
Yeah.
Who are you telling?
We, like,
you
have the experience.
You kind of just spoke on kind of what we're going through, and not to like give too much information, but like a lot of people kind of were upset when we got off of YouTube and on Patreon. But it's like, if y'all really love this show, help us, because we can't do it off of the YouTube taking 55% and us doing this all from scratch on our own. You know, like, it's just not possible. Like, we can't just have a, what is it called when you're just like a passion project that we're financially paying for out of pocket from something else for forever, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just like, it just takes so much time. And now once you actually can get some money from what you're doing, if you're a good director or anything, you're going to keep investing and keep building and growing your platform. Yep. So that's kind of what we're on. But so to create your own streaming platform, when did you realize that was possible? Or like, is it harder than, it seems hard, but was it like?
It's basically what you're doing now on YouTube. Like, you have followers, you have a unique amount of subscribers that tune in to whenever you drop. And so once I started seeing the demand and how quick it was to retrieve the, like, we got those 30,000 back quick, and I just thought it was just gonna be hell. But then
that's what's up.
The Instagram, the actual production page, like, everything just kept growing, and no matter what, it was just the right time, because you got to think, this was before Hulu became really big. This was like 2016, 2017 when I first started. And so this was before, like, I was doing Vimeo.
I remember Vimeo.
And so it was for subscriptions, it was pay PPV, so it's pay per view. Episode. So my episodes were very hot, so they were paying like $2 to $4 per episode. But then when you got Netflix and Hulu and Paramount, all these you know, putting out $9.99, $7.99, what it did, you got to come down too, because basically you was getting $24 off of a whole season, but now you got to reduce yourself down to $9.99. So you got to think of different ways to like get bigger bang for your buck. So for me, I know there's 4 weeks in a month, but I know if there are six episodes, after three episodes, we're going to go on a little break for 2 weeks and then come back, like how they do the mid-season finales and come back, because once you run through four episodes, that's the whole month. So then I got that whole full $9. So how do they make the $9 stretch to
$18? Sure, we doing math, bitches. Keep up.
Y'all might not get an episode on that fifth week.
I had to put a calculator.
Y'all cheating us on that fifth week, man.
And it just won't make sense. So once you finally learn like the math, once you do the math, and once you realize that you can, and my biggest thing that saves me is scaling. So like even sitting in here, and I'm just thinking, I'm like, wow, like they got like back and forth, like you do four shows, and I called it like, well, I'm sorry, but like you got camera here, camera B, change your outfits. That's a whole nother, that's a whole nother segment. So when I start doing those things and start actually, some of my shows are vertical and some of my shows can be shot from the iPhone. So I start really scaling down versus using like the big cameras and having to pay $400 or $500 for like the camera people coming in, because I do all my editing. And I'm really good at the, like my editing, but if I'm shooting like scaling and doing like different projects, one on the iPhone, one vertical, and then you do the ones that's, you know, like, You have three or four shows now that can run at one time. And then I found myself working six shows at one time, and I was like, I was so completely overwhelmed, but I was okay, because once I learned how to not do too much, shoot two or three episodes maybe twice a week versus 4 days a week, and you know, you got people who work like show, like people who work jobs, and then you have people who are actually entrepreneurs. So then mm-hmm. you have to figure out, okay, how can I make this schedule work? Mm-hmm. How can I bring this person, if they get off at 5 and this person has to be at work at such and such, then you shoot this person on here, then you basically have to take a picture, make sure you bring the same earrings because the continuity.
It gets deep. It gets so deep.
It's too much. But once you really get to going, you kind of know, you just kind of know how to run your orbit.
Yeah. Well, shout out to you for editing on your own. Like
that part too.
Yeah.
You know, like the post-production sometimes is the hardest part. It takes mm-hmm. the most time. And I love how you're breaking it down because people, I don't think they understand what goes into productions and podcasts and having all the things. You get what I'm saying? Especially if you want it to be good quality and have good guests, good topics. You know what I mean? It's a lot of time. It's a lot of money that go into it. So shout out to everybody that's supporting you, supporting us, and helping us grow our own networks. That's because true. I think what it sounds like is ownership is important for you. And you've since then grown to understand mm-hmm. that these other platforms kind of really don't have our best interests. You know what I mean? They're making more money than we are sometimes.
And you see the A-listers talk about ownership all the time, and mm-hmm. I'm just gonna say this: what got me early on, I have a show called Living for the Weekend, which mm-hmm. is my flagship, which started like in 2015.
What flagship mean?
The very first show to start everything off, that jumps everything off.
Okay.
And so it's still running, but my other shows have either canceled out, but this is the show that has spinoffs. We've had 2 spinoffs. We did a show called COVID that came out during the COVID pandemic where we shot on the iPhone, but all of the characters were stuck in one house together, and there was the National Guard was outside, so we would sneak outside to go party because, you know, Atlanta was wide open.
Wide the fuck open.
It was a fun series, and we shot them on the iPhone with 3 people at a time, so we still had to say 600 feet away, and one of my friends was like, what are you going to do? What is your contingency plan during the pandemic? I was like, girl, what would you mean? Have you watched the news? I was like, no, we just finished rapping Living for the Weekend. What's going on? And she's like, well, we're shut down as of March the 13th, and we literally finished March the 13th filming Living for the Weekend season 4, and we shot 13 episodes. And so when they told me that, I was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to break this down into like maybe 4 episodes per season to break this over to 3 seasons because I don't know how long we're going to be gone. So we shot COVID, and COVID, each episode had 1 million views. It was so viral.
Ooh, that was the perfect time.
It was perfect time. And that's when Cardi B's coronavirus
came out.
That was like our opening thing. And so what we did, we took the cast from Living for the Weekend because I have a spinoff called Blue Vante. And the reason why I say what I'm about to tell you now is I learned from the Wayans a long time ago is
shout
to never
to
sell your baby, like live in living color, because the whites will come in and take over, and they don't care about the passion, they don't care about the legitimacy of it, they don't care about the everything, anything, like the important part. They just care about the money value, and you just saw that last season. So what I learned from them, when this white network came to me and said, hey, we love Living for the Weekend, we're thinking about giving you $2,500, baby. No, who's doing
$2,500?
This show is no. And I'm
total.
Yes. And then that's when I was like, you know what, I can create you a spinoff. I can do you a short film. And they were like, yeah, let's do 20. I was like, no, I'm thinking more like 14, 15 for a short film. No, don't give me the 2-3. I'm not your average creator, so you might want to go lower a little lower and ask them if they want to do that. Then they kept coming back to me, and then Living for the Weekend ended up getting a pre-nomination for the Daytime Emmys.
Okay.
For my first time entering. I was like, oh.
That's dope.
And so it got hyped, and so they came back around again. And they were like, oh, we can do 65. I was like, no, I'm still stuck on the 14.
Okay, period.
And so that's how we did that. And then when the movie came out, it was supposed to be a short film, but then I added like 10,000 because if I put my name on something, it just can't look a certain way. So
yeah.
I added like 10,000 to it. I made it a feature film.
Okay.
Well, it was like so good that they wanted, the critics loved it. Like, it got so much press that they wanted a sequel series. They wanted a sequel, but they didn't want a movie sequel. They wanted a sequel series.
Mm.
Wanted 5 episodes. Well, maybe, I mean, I got to open and close 5 times. And
right.
Like, we're thinking we can do another 15. No, you're thinking wrong.
Right.
Those are 5 movies.
Exactly.
In short
and that's
form.
Even short on that tip, like for a movie.
Yes.
Like,
you're
being cute
and so
with that.
They were 22 minutes. I had to be 22 minutes, and I did 5 episodes. And my good friend, Justice Smollett, stepped in, and he was like, that's when he did B-Boy Blues, and I was. I did some things with that, and I submitted some things, and then we became like friends. He came down here and moved down here for a while. He was staying with Taraji for a little minute, and we were all like hanging
out. Better flex, shout out to Mr. Taraji.
But it was so cool. Like, I had a friend, like, there was no business proportion to it at all. And finally, like, 3 or 4 months in, he was like, I want to direct for you. And I was like, I'm so stressed because, like, they want me to do a sequel, and then they want me to do a series, 5 episodes, and they want me to direct, show run, produce it, lead
it's
it,
so much.
And edit. I need help. He was like, what do you need? I need a director. Let's go. And so we worked it out, and he was just like, let's do blah, 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 blah. And he came on, and, like, the whole aura of the set was just amazing. Like, people stepped their game all the way up. And for me, I stepped my game up as a showrunner, because bringing someone like that of that caliber to the set.
Yeah.
At first, you know, we were, you know, as, you know, your own production company, you just make things work for yourself, and you know how to make things work. You know, always do things like how Paramount would do it, or how Peacock would do it. You do things how we can get our hands on what our resources are, what our budget allows. And then you just learn how to start using the people who lean on you, and people who actually lean on you for certain things. Like, hey, I need to use your restaurant because, you know, blah, 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 blah. Like, and you just never know what people say. They'll be like, well, I want you to use it because I want people to come, you know, support it. So, like, just, we don't want it, and just shout us out on the credits.
Yeah.
Then you got to think people with nice houses. And me just going to a party, oh, but you got a nice house. Okay, I would love to film up here. Would you?
You going into stuff as a director. Everything you get into, like.
I went to a bar, and I was like, this is a nice bar. I would love to film up here. Know what I'm doing? They're like, would you like to film up?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know what I'm saying? And then you just use your community, because your community wants you to use, not use them, but they want to be needed. They want the obligation to feel wanted, to feel needed, like they're doing something for the community. So when you start doing that and realizing the impact that you have on the community, it was just like, wow. So no matter what I asked for, I was able to land certain things without having that big budget.
Yeah.
And that's what made Blue Vontae so big. You would have thought I had $1 million budget, but because of the resources I had, and then my director, my friend, brought in people who I could never pay, you know what I'm saying? Like, to set, to assist different things, or, you know, hey, I'm directing for Corey, blah, blah, blah. Could you blah, blah, blah? And then it's just everything that I ever needed just came. And then they renewed us for a third season. And that's when I said, oh, they're getting over. And I finally got them for 50K.
Hello?
Nothing, because even in the Writers Guild, one episode is $35,000. You know what I'm saying? So I'm really still lowballing myself. But I know that I need to do this to really get ahead. However, I know this is my last final season, so I'm going to say the final season, because what y'all have done is ripped me off. Y'all have raped my pay, and I'm wearing six hats. I'm tired by this time. And the last season, I didn't have my best friend to direct. I had to step back into showrunner, director, producer, and led the final season. And, you know, each season that elevates, it just has to elevate. It can't look like the former. So it was just so much. So for 3 years, I didn't do anything. When I lost my streaming platform the first time, when they went bankrupt, I was just like, I don't know what to do. And you know, this is the day and age now where Hollywood is not giving out budgets for just anything, and you just have to, it's all basically who you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I fell into like this deep depression, and I was just like, oh my God, like, is this what I'm reduced to now? Like, and I almost didn't even want to come back to it, because like how people, like how that network did me, I was like, I'll just go back and work in collections and work in blah, blah, blah. And just like, no, bitch. Let me adjust your crown this final time, but I don't ever.
Hello?
Because nobody likes nobody that works in collections. Let's be clear.
If you do my glory, you just get cut out all day. I'm never going to be like,
oh, my God.
Hey, how you doing?
So let's get into your project, The Way He Carried.
Mm-hmm.
So the project, The Way He Carried, is deeply personal. Can you explain the story behind it?
Yes. So, switching gears. The Way He Carried was a short documentary piece that I didn't even know was going to be a documentary piece, but a very great friend of mine lost his battle to depression last year around this time. And it was not your average depression. It was high-functioning depression, which means you can be ambitious, you can have the best career, you can smile and look as if it's okay. But once you clock out and go home, you deal with the demons that are deep within you. And if you don't have a strong support system or a strong mind, that's how people lose their battle. And The Way He Carried, we were filming the final season of Blue Vontae, which I was talking to you guys about. And in that final season, it was very mental health coded that final season. It was about my character, Keyvante, who had lost his boyfriend due to a car accident, or his ex-boyfriend, because they were soul ties, but they had broken up and were seeing different people. And at the time, right before his accident, they linked back up and they were supposed to get back together. Mm-hmm. And they were supposed to let each other's partners, let their partners know that, hey, unfortunately, blah, 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 you know, I'm still in love with my ex. Damn. And before that could happen, the character lost his battle. And so that's where Bluvante was mental health coded. And so my character was journaling. So I was narrating the entire season through writing in my journal via computer. Okay. So it was kind of giving like Gossip Girl, but not really Gossip Girl, because I was narrating my thoughts, how I was feeling. But it was also narrating each episode, and each chapter was something like gaslighting or breadcrumbing or just different things that stick out when it comes to like narcissism, or just different things that my character was so stressed out over grief that he was out here dealing with poly relationships and situationships and drug use. I mean, he was outside. And what I didn't know was that is the case for a lot of people dealing with high functioning depression. And I'm just speaking from myself by basing it off of people who I know in the community and how things all flow together. And so what ended up happening was I was looking to cast for the character Ian, which Malik, who passed, ended up playing. And on the final day, I still had not cast that character. So I was like, let me just take a break. I'm going to go down to give me a salad from Jason's Deli. And I walked in and I saw him. He was just sitting there. He just blank. And I saw him from the side. I was like, damn, he's fine. I was like, oh, shit. That's
checking out your friend.
Let me get it together. So I'm like, Malik. He was like, what's up, bro? But it wasn't the normal what's up, bro. He was like, well, it was just dead inside. And you know, normally we hug somebody, it's like maybe 3 to 5 seconds. That was not the case. It was like literally 45. That's a long time. 45 seconds is like a long time to hug someone. I was like, hey, you okay? He wouldn't let go. He was like, life just be life, man. And you know, I was like, I'm gonna call you after my production day. I want to talk to you about something. So instantly I was thinking, he's tall as me. He has the look. He ain't ever acted before, but I'ma see what's going on. But more than anything, I wanted to keep him close to me, because I've had two friends to succumb to depression and suicide, and I just know what it looks like. I know what it feels like. I know when the red flags are there. I ain't like how he looked. I didn't like the hug. So I was like, so that evening I called him. I was like, hey, on my way home, I saw that he posted some pictures and just model like, and I was like, he looks so commercial. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, this is my decision. I'm gonna go ahead and just make this decision, because I ain't got that much time. Hell, we shoot tomorrow.
Yeah.
So,
come through.
So I reached out to him. I called him. I was like, hey, I'm gonna, how are you really feeling? He broke it down to me, and I was just like, okay. Have you ever thought about acting? And he was like, bro, I've been trying to get on with you for the longest, and you know, I'm your friend first, so I ain't one of the people, so I like the friendship first, but anything else other than that, like, I'm down, like, I got you. I was like, I'm gonna send you something. I want you to take a look at it and hit me. Mind you, this is like 8 p.m. I was like, hit me up tomorrow once you read through everything. And then me, I go to sleep at the drop of the hat. So around 10:30, 11, I'm asleep. So I wake up around 11:30. Hey, bro, I just read all 6 episodes. That is me. Damn. Like I can be that character. I've been to jail. I've been to all these different things. Like, that character is very toxic as fuck. He's a narcissist, and I've dealt with so much. Like, I feel like this is my outlet. And I was so happy, because I just wanted to keep him close to me, because I just wanted to watch him. You know what I'm saying? Like, just, I'm spending 18 to 20 hours on set. I can't. You know what I'm saying? Like, so I just didn't like how that felt. So he comes on set prepared after the first take, the way we rehearsed it. I was like, okay, so let me just make sure I can back him up a little bit more, because I know that I'm seasoned. I'm going to have training for it. But he does it. And when that first cut came, when I tell you, it was like he was a seasoned vet. And after we said cut, I was like, you tried it. Okay, I see where this is going. And each take just got better and better, and he became part of the one take crew. And I was like, oh, we don't need to take it again. Like, it's really, really perfect.
Yeah.
And he was so happy, like, just the joy in his eyes, even like the screening. Like, we had a lot of talks, and I recorded the talks, but during the screening he left some small messages in my phone that I didn't even know. I just went looking for like the, when he passed, I went looking for like pictures from the screening where he was very happy because I knew that I had recorded like the moment where he saw himself on screen. He just got up and you could just see the tears and like, like just happiness. And he was just like, he's like, that's me. He was like, here we go. I remember filming this part. And just, I had never seen that part. So I was just seeing like him depressed and stressed out to just seeing his eyes glow and just his friends came over and they were just so excited for him and everyone was posting about it. I don't think he had ever felt that type of, I don't know, like something, like a project that he had worked on. And his mom, dad, brother, cousins, family all reached out. They saw the documentary, they commented on it. That was the biggest thing that I was worried about, because when you do a documentary, sometimes you just have to go on base and you don't know the family members. You don't know how they're gonna receive everything. But it just was one of those projects that he asked me on one of, it was January 2nd, 2024, when we shot the final season. And he said, hey, bro, can you stay behind after we finish wrapping up? And this was like maybe like 1 a.m. We were like filming from like 6 to like 1. And when we filmed, he was like, hey, I just want to talk to you. I just don't have nobody to talk to. And I was like, yeah, I'll stay. And he told me how he was feeling without saying it, just about life and just how fragile life is. And he just felt like he didn't have any support in what he wanted, like how he was feeling, like he didn't want to be here anymore and say that. And so as a friend, when you hear stuff like that, you're like, okay, so I'm not going anywhere for a long time. So I'm just going to be sitting right here because I've seen this happen, this play out before. And so everything that he told me in those 8 to 9 hours, that's how I got the title, because he carried all of that stuff since the age of 16 without going into everything. Some things happened way back in childhood that led all the way up to adulthood, that was the reason why he felt the way that he did, and everything that happened like as a punching bag that added on to that was just more weight that he carried, and it just kept bringing him down and down. And so he asked me to tell his story, and I was like, when he first asked me, I was like, your story? I was like, what does that mean? Like, when you do like a story, I was like a documentary or something. And first thing I thought was like, when people say stuff like that, like they have cancer, they're trying to document stuff. So I was trying not to you know, go there, but I didn't know what that meant until it happened, really. And so it happened like months later, when I was on another project, and I got a call that morning that it happened, and they were like, hey, are you okay? And I was like, I'm still asleep. Let me call you when I wake up. You know, it's FaceTime. And he was like, let me call you when I wake up. I was like, no. Are you okay? And I was like, why wouldn't I be? He was like, you don't know. And I was like, know what? And he was like, is anybody there with you? And I was like, no, there's nobody here with me. But clearly, you're about to tell me some bad news. Just who is it? And he finally told me. I didn't cry. I didn't break down. It was just one of those feelings where all you could say was, damn. Like, because now I blame myself. I felt like there was more help that could have been done. And the first thing that he said, you know, regardless of the situation, I love what you do for the community. I'm indebted to you. I'll do whatever project, whatever you got going on, because I know that you're the one to tell my story. And after he passed, it all made sense. And certain things that I left out, that it wasn't the general public's business, but the story that he wanted to tell was about depression and how people can get over, like how people, you know, are coping through certain things, and it could help another life, it could help save these different lives or people, younger generation, about being lost. And so when he passed, I found like 3 videos in my phone that he had made while I was like cooking tacos, like in the background of the screening, where he was like explaining who he was, and like he could cut hair, he could braid, these were his hobbies, this is what he was really good at. He may have been shy at the beginning, but at the very end he was, and I was like, oh my God. So I used that as the narration tactic, as the machine and engine to narrate the weight he carried. And so me as the character in Blue Vante, I returned to the computer to help narrate for him from beyond the grave as he narrated. So it basically, the character Keybonte came back, and it was a device used from where he was discovered on Blue Vante to help tell his actual story. Because this time it wasn't a character who had passed and we were grieving, we were actually grieving a character who was on the show who is actually a real person. And so it tied it all together, and I submitted it to the Southeast Emmy. So I find out on the 29th if we got the submission or not. I mean, if we got the Emmy nomination or not.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, I want to first say condolences. You know, even I know you said outside of Malik, you've experienced this with other friends. Mm-hmm. And I've seen him before on social media, Malik. Mm-hmm. I think I've seen him on like Father Flex page or Big Sexy page. Somebody doing somebody hair.
He put that. He put that little weed cat.
The top of the
he was great with that too. Yeah.
So I think like his story and just you saying the terms that you're saying, like high.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s.
Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects.
With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last. Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com.
All medications require eligibility and prescription. First month as low as $25 for the 12-month MedPlus plan. Does not include the cost of GLP-1 medications.
Functioning depression is something that needs to be spoken on more, especially in the Black community, because a lot of people go through that. Mm-hmm. And I think when we see people that got it all and they're a barber and they're doing content and they look good and they look so happy and they always pouring into people, it goes back to when they say, like, check on your strong friends, because you never know what they're really going through. And I've had people around me that have succumbed to, you know, their depression as well. And I know that feeling of like feeling guilty and things like that. But what I tell people all the time is when people get to a certain point where they're like, I'm clocking out, there's nothing that a person really can do. Besides just kind of be there for them, get them a hug. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like you did a lot for him by letting him play that role, and even just like him picking up your phone and just saying goofy stuff while you cooking and stuff. Mm-hmm. It sounds like you definitely did do a lot for him in his, you know, his final days of like coming to peace in a sense with what he decided to do. And I do appreciate that you shared that story for sure, because I feel like right now, especially with like social media and like the influencers, like, people look at people on the internet and think like, oh, they got it going. Yeah. And it's like, that's not always true.
And yeah, and like success doesn't always equal happiness.
So
you know
true.
What I mean? And another thing is, there's so many, especially gay men, that we hear about suicide. Yeah. And I think it's like a fact that like when men say it, they're more, I don't want to misquote it, but like they're more likely to be successful with it because they tend to use like weapons or, you know, stuff that's going to really cause, you know, going to do what it needs to do. Why do you think it is so common with gay men? Because like you said, like just even you alone, you had three friends that took their lives. Were they all gay men?
One was not.
Okay.
The other two, but still, it's more so in Black men versus just Black gay men.
Right, okay.
And it's because of the what's set before you. Oh, you're so strong. You're a man. Man up. With Black gay men, we're so used to have to cover up or adjust in public, or to make ourselves comfortable, we have to sometimes code certain things, or, oh, what's up, bro? You know, just, I'm not doing all that shit in 2026. You know what I'm saying? Like, the old
what's up, girl?
Yeah, right.
This is what it is. Right.
You see me, y'all have seen me. Right. I'm not even gonna fake the fuck.
He's so tall, everything.
He's so tall. He's so tall.
You know what I'm saying? So it's just like, you know, this day and age, like, I feel like some Black DL men go through that too, because the what's set before your parents, your father, if the father's present, oh, child, I dealt with an ex that has a present father and there's no winning, then because you're supposed to be a man and you're going to do this and you're going to, I don't try to hear this shit. I don't got no father, but I'm me. Mm-hmm. So you're going to take me as I am.
Yeah.
And that's another story. But anywho, it's, I think for Black men in general, because if you look on social media, everything is so, oh, he's sassy, or oh, yes, he's showing too much emotion. Oh, so you can't even piss without being sassy. You can't even sit down and wipe your ass. Oh, you wiping your ass with tissue? Oh, that's sassy. What can we do? What can y'all do? I see why Black men do it, especially the ones who can't even be themselves. But for Black gay men, you got to think also the bullying, the parents who don't accept them. So many factors, and they don't feel seen. They don't feel valued. And if you don't have a strong brain or a strong mind, you don't win.
We pressuring people to be men so much that they rather, you know, leave than that's insane. That's insane. And we do gotta realize, like, it's better if we let them cry or let them be. Is there something that you would have done differently, or that, and it does, like Britt said, it sounds like you've actually done a lot. Is there something you would have done differently, or you would want to tell somebody struggling with this right now?
Differently, what I wish I would have done at that moment was probably moved him in with me. But I don't think that would have been, what's going to happen is going to happen. I just wish that I probably would have known earlier, and,
you can't just put that, like, you can't, like, even somebody moving in with you is like,
how? I know, but that's why I said it's still inevitable is going to happen. So for people that come behind this, what I would say is it's very important to know that, one, you are valuable. You are worth life. You are worth living for. Life is worth having. You are very special. If you don't have, because I've seen things where family are cruel. People don't want them, and their family is just downright evil. But their chosen family is the one who loves them to death. And I've seen that. Mm-hmm. And coming from a loving family, and just as I didn't think that was, I'm like, well, how can your family not? And then how can your family not love you? How can your family not support you? Mm-hmm. How can your family leave you out on the streets and not bring you in? And that's just because of trauma that has happened early on. Things, some families aren't just not the, every family's not the same family.
It ain't
every
family's
not loving. Every family's not blood. It's thicker than, sometimes the water is thicker than the blood, you know?
Okay.
And so what I found in this gay lifestyle is that gay chosen family sometimes are the ones that will save you from yourselves. And you just have to get with the right people, because if you're getting with the people who are turning up every Monday through Sunday, Lord Jesus Christ, and then you're getting with the people who, just the wrong crowd, without saying certain things, and the people who don't have a lot going for themselves, who have a lot to lose, and then you have people who don't got shit to lose. When you start mixing it up with that, and it just is so many variations of why people can do that to themselves.
Yeah,
and I know you said, like, the restaurant when you saw him at Jason's Deli or whatever was like a sign that something wasn't right. Mm-hmm. Was there anything else that you saw, like, in hindsight, just for people that might have a strong friend or the one that's always cheering people up? Like, was there anything else that you saw that was like, let me, that ain't right, you know what I mean?
When you normally see someone who's a public figure or an influencer or someone who's known in the public, and they're always vibrant, they're always helpful. What's up, man? Oh, when I get done with this, I got you, blah, blah, blah. But then when you see them with their head down and they're always on a level 10, but then you see them on a level 2, and I'm an empath, so I already instantly can clock it.
Yeah.
So, and again, I lost 2 friends before, so instantly when I saw his head down and when he gave me a hug, he went his normal, said, "What up, bro?" It was, "Hey, what's up, bro?" I'm like, "Oh, no, we're not doing this. What's going on?" Yeah. That's why eventually when I got ready to release the hug, but he was still there. And I was like, "Are you okay?" And he was like, "Life just be life." And I was like, "I'm gonna, are you cool? Oh, okay, right." And he said, "Yeah, I'm fine. I'm hungry." I was like, "Can I call you this afternoon?" And I was asking those questions, because when you don't ask those questions, like, are you okay enough for me to go do what I need to handle for 3 or 4 hours? Are you you're not gonna do, like, that was me asking without asking, because just everyone's different, and you just can't approach certain situations with aggressiveness or just, hey, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's just, it's just a lot.
Yeah. Well, condolences.
Yeah.
And shout out to you for telling his story. And
people could check that out on YouTube.
Yes, it's on YouTube. It's called The Weight He Carried, and it's, if you just type in The Weight He Carried, it'll pop right up. And also, even on Google, there's a GLAD did a write-up.
Oh, I think I did see that too.
Oh, that's what's up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so if you type that in on Google, both of them will pop up, and it's on my YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's switch over to queer representation in film.
Okay.
Okay. So do you think queer representation in film is expanding, or is it starting to feel oversaturated? Are we tired of the token gay best friend? Because I personally have been noticing that for maybe the last 4 or 5 years, where it feels like they're trying to, you know, include us, but they just kind of keep throwing us in. It's like, that gay best friend, that gay best friend. So how do you feel?
Well, that's one of the reasons why I actually started my production company, because we were always the token best friend. And over the recent years, they've started to push us in more of the leading roles, mm-hmm. but they don't have long shelf life. Mm-hmm. So they get canceled, or they do one, two good seasons, maybe three.
Yeah.
And then they're off the air. And even when they're on the air, for Pose, for example, you see, 911 gets a lot of publicity. Hulu, they get promotion. But when it comes to the Black and Brown, there was not a lot of publicity, promo. And so they had to rely on their celebrity, you know, a lot to do that. And then the show was canceled when people start putting their foot down. And then we become hard to work with.
Oh, mm-hmm. When I want extra little pay, because y'all got me out here working on the hours.
I gave you good solid seasons in the ratings, and that's why we're
you
back
feel
now.
Me?
But then, you know, you got your Naomi Watts over here making such and such, and you got your Glenn Closes, and you got your all these other people. But then when we're, this is for LGBTQ, and this is the show that you guys picked up, and then you want to pay us first time contract negotiation fees and things of that nature. And so what I'm seeing is, yeah, we can get leading roles, but it's the pay is trash. So you might as well go and do it on your YouTube. Might as well go ahead and get your, you know what I'm saying, those things. Because once the, when the hype is there, it's there. But when it's gone, you're back, you know, looking for job after job after job. And we don't get jobs like that. So that's why it's very important to create your own platforms. It's very important to do distribution where they're looking for people who have urban niche LGBTQ content, because it's very hard to come by, because studios aren't producing it. So it's up to the indie studios to produce and then distribute it. So like, oh, when did this come out? Oh, yeah, because Paramount show the hell ain't doing it. A Hulu show the hell ain't doing it. And if they do it, it's white.
No, for
it's
real.
It's Blanco characters.
Yeah, Blanco.
Yeah.
And I can't relate to that. Because I remember everybody, like, on the lesbian tip, like, everybody used to like the L word. And I was like, I can't get into it, because that's not my life. That's not real lesbianism to me. Like, this is some, like, kinky, you know, let's go home and scissor. Like, that's not all we do. We do scissor.
We had a storyline on there.
But then it'd be like the writers. You got to look at who's writing it too. And it's like, okay, then you got these white men writing this lesbian story. Mm-hmm. So now it's like, is it kind of being written from like a lesbian perspective or from like a fantasy perspective?
More so a fantasy. That's why it's very important to have writer rooms that reflect the story that you're telling. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can't have white writers in a all black, brown,
it don't work like that.
90s AIDS pandemic or epidemic drama. You can't, because they can't relate.
Yeah.
Like the, and that's where sometimes the disconnect comes in when it comes to portrayals. And so there are some good things, but then it's very far in between. Like, you may get one good, like, and even with Moonlight, those weren't gay characters. Those weren't gay men. They were portraying gay characters.
Right.
But it took heterosexual men to pull that. When you have a shitload of homosexual black men, black and brown men, who could most definitely pull that off? And it's just still, they're not seeing the worth, because if y'all want to do these stories are so worth telling, why not use people in the community? And that's where a lot of people disconnect from, like, why would it take straight people play the best gay character? How do they know? They don't even live that lifestyle.
Exactly.
And so it becomes those things. So it's just up to us, indie directors, producers, to put out the quality type that you would see on the Peacocks and the Hulus on your own platforms and send it out for distribution, because they always find it somewhere else, but it's never going to be the main studios who are going to put it out. Ever.
It's so crazy just to think about how many gay actors there are that you would not hire a gay actor for, and not saying, because obviously actors are portraying something that they're not, right. You know, so get that out the way. Mm-hmm. But why not just like, this is the perfect, just, we always talk about it. I'm gonna just say it really quick.
Go ahead.
Like when Keke Palmer Thank was you. A stud in the movie, like there's so many stud actors that y'all could have got yeah. that could have killed this and know really what it is. Like, yeah. just like how you said, like a gay man or something, like, I wouldn't do that, or I wouldn't, like, yeah. that's not how we do it. Let's go back to the table, you know, and talk about this. It's just so weird that out of all the options, and I'm sure there's so many gay actors mm-hmm. trying out for things.
Directors, producers. Yeah. But then when you challenge them, they'll get rid of you to humble you and bring in someone who's not going to question them.
Yeah.
And then how many gay actors do you see playing straight roles, like, as far as men? It's probably not that many.
Not that That's many. A good
point. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So it's yeah. just like...
It's really who you know at that point.
Yeah.
It's not even about talent.
Yeah.
Anymore.
One thing I've noticed, because we've been like pitching some shows and things like that, it seems like they always want to add a name that has clout behind it.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, oh, I don't like if I want to play myself. They're like, nah, let's get Young and May to play you, because Young and May is more popular than you. They're not going to know you.
Because they want their, and this is what I'm dealing with now. So what they, it's called an attachment. So what the studios want you to do, for them to spend, and mind you, per episode, you're looking at budgets can range from $800,000 to $2 million an episode. So mm-hmm. they're going to want their money recouped. So we don't know this person, X, Y, and Z. We know they got an Instagram following. But we know Keke Palmer yeah. got a long history. So if we attach her to this yep. and bring in such and such, we can recoup at least 80% in opening night
yeah.
or on premiere night versus... someone who doesn't have a shelf life of being a Hollywood actor or actress, doesn't have any credits,
yeah,
can be good as hell and yep. come in and eat it. But because the public don't know them,
mm-hmm.
they're going to go with your A-lister or your yep. B-lister, because attachments is basically better than money. If I don't have the budget to pay for X, Y, and Z, I can attach X, Y, and Z and give them an executive producer credit, and now my show can be made.
Instead yeah. of paying the marketing budget,
mm-hmm.
to like, to just push it everywhere, you're getting the person so you can kind of skip that, you know.
Red tape.
They're yeah. trying to get Ask Marie to play her. I said, let Excel play Excel. Why y'all want to get, no shade to Ask Marie, because I fuck with you. But goddamn, let her play herself. I think it hit different too when it's like a is it a biopic, I guess, in that sense? When you're like playing yourself, what is that considered, like a biography yeah. or something like that? but it's like, then, I don't want nobody else to play me.
Even
fuck.
Then, like,
Get it out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
I get it, but like, the attachments is what brings the money, and it brings the sponsorship. How you guys were yeah. saying that the sponsorship, it takes such X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
They don't get that money. They don't get that sponsorship. They don't get the $2 million release yeah. until they know Keke Palmer, or unless they know Angela Bassett, or unless they know Taraji B. Like, unless yeah. they know valuable names on there, they're going to say,
yeah.
oh, this is beautiful.
From a business sense, I kind of get it. Let's just say from like on the No Homo show, like somebody could have a great story and not be known. Unfortunately, somebody that's popping, that maybe their story is whatever,
mm-hmm.
it's going to get more views, mm-hmm. right? But then it's, I also look at movies and shows differently. There's so many shows I've seen that I didn't know the person, but I love the story, and that's what made me love the show.
Right.
I'm not necessarily like, come on, Beyonce wasn't that great in the movies. But don't tell me, like, I don't want no more. With nobody, but
that's what's changing now, though, because now I don't know if you guys noticed, but like Access Hollywood, Karamo Show, all these first run syndication shows have been canceled
yep.
in lieu of platforms like this.
Hello,
it's easier to scale,
yeah.
you can get bigger bang for your buck, and all the producers can get paid, because basically what you did was shot 4 shows. In 10 hours a day, and now you got 30 episodes for season 1 versus having Paramount come in and use 64 people shooting 2 cameras.
Yeah.
It's wasted all that money.
Yeah.
Because I think about how much money like they spend. I'm like, well, baby, I can make this like $1 million budget. Y'all spend $800,000. All I need is, you can give me 10K.
And 15,000. 14,500.
Put the number up. Okay, next time I talk to you, did you ask for 20K yet? 30K yet? Because we not about to keep asking for 14. Bye.
I got you. And I'm bringing all my resources. And they already Hollywood. They going to come in and get that, because Hollywood ain't calling people like they used to. No more. Like, in the 90s, yeah. we had all the shows that were doing
all
traditional shows, traditional seasons. 26, 28, Beverly Hills 90210, Melrose Place doing 32 episodes. That is unheard of now.
Yeah.
You better get 10.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And that's where the money was in there. Now they don't have literally money for the budget anymore for production unless you are shooting elite Hollywood flicks.
Yeah. And that's what sucks when it comes to like entertainment and, you know, film and trying to do podcasts. It's like at the end of the day, it's a business. And when you start messing with the elites and the higher ups, the people that are, you know, the gatekeepers, you know what I mean? Like, they don't give a fuck about none of that shit. They don't care if you passionate about this shit, bitches. This gonna make me some money. It's like, at the end of the day, like, it's just a business to y'all, but it's a story to us. So I do respect and appreciate you for, you know, being that person that's, you know, pushing our stories and things like that.
Yeah, so I did have a question, especially because you have your own like networks and your own like all your shows are based on like gay lifestyle, like right?
Period.
Do you think that queer movies are only for like queer people, and do you ever think that they could be featured on the big screen, just catered to everybody, it just being a good storyline? Because one thing we see, like we just talked about, is like there's great storylines, but the budget isn't always there because I guess they're trying to say that this isn't for everybody. So how do you feel about that?
Glad you brought that up. There's a project that, well, one, I did a proof of concept on Instagram and it got like 7.9 million views. The other one got like 3 million views. And that's how my distributor found me, because it went viral, and it's called The Gunkle Chronicles. It's about a black gay uncle who is stuck with his nephew and nieces. And this particular proof of concept, it was his nephew had to go to school, and he had missed the bus, and I had to drop him off. I dropped him off late because, you know, black folks always get the kids to school late. And then there's a truancy policy, so, you know, you can't miss too many days. So there's so much stuff that happens in the black community that is very much humorous. So when I go to drop him off, I get a call to come pick him up, because when I dropped him off, it was the gay uncle dropping him off. And, you know, gay uncles don't mind. Like, got him out the car. The nephew gave me a hug and then sent him on into school. Well, one of the, I guess the kids made fun of him for having a gay uncle. So he beat the kid up.
Period.
So he got suspended from school. So I had to go back up literally an hour after I dropped him off to go pick him up. And I was like, asked him in the car. I was like, well, why did you fight the little boy? And he's like, he called you gay. I said, well, did you beat his ass? He said, yep. And I dapped him up and played a very hood song that talks about beating folks up. And it
is
just
it Knuck If You Buck?
Yeah, it wasn't Knuck If You Buck.
Oh, okay.
It was a 3-6 Mafia song
from
Memphis. And so it would just hit home. It was, and so you had your, it was more straight people who shared the post, because everybody has a gay brother, a gay cousin.
Right.
That's so true.
And I love that concept.
To answer your question, yes, there is projects, because when you do something relatable like that, because kids are innocent, the gay uncles are always the favorites, because no matter what, no matter, or the aunties, no matter how you look at it.
I'm a gay auntie.
They're always the favorites. No matter how you swing it, they are always the favorites, because they are not your traditional, they don't live by traditional standards and values. They're always the one that's going to sneak you candy, drive the car. It's just always those things that your mama or your daddy won't let you do. The fun auntie is normally the gay one.
Yeah.
And so what happened was, my distributor was like, I don't want to distribute this. I feel like we can shop this to, and I can't say the network that's interested, but it's a big streamer network that is interested. But what they in return asked me, it was to attach two people, one for my mom, who is like the grandmother who still got it, who has a YN boyfriend, who don't raise all her kids, so she don't babysit the grandkids, but as soon as the grandkids come on her face, she melts. So she's like, just pack her stuff, just come up, just bring, you know, stuff like that. So
Kiki, Niecy Nash. You ain't gotta tell us.
No, my attachments are, no, it's, but they're names too that we said.
You wanna
earlier.
Tell us?
No, I can't.
Okay,
say
okay,
it,
cool. Tell us off the camera.
Some of them earlier. So those are my attachments, and so we'll see how that goes. And so basically, what that comes with is a pitch deck, a pilot, and your attachments. Because my proof of concept was very, it was Instagram. It was in your face, so it was already 7. That's 8 million views, and then my secondary follow up did 3 million views.
Hello.
So that we already know it works,
right?
So they're doing what they need to be doing. And so I did my attachments. So they said, you do the attachments, so let us worry about the budget. You just create. So that's the space I'm in now. So like when I go out and I use Instagram or Facebook or TikTok as my proof of concept, well, movies don't do that. So they do focus groups in television. Well, this is my focus group. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
This is how I'm focusing, because I got this amount of followers. Let me put this out, see how I do. And that's even dope. On my HD Productions Network page, I posted that same reel again last month.
already almost 700,000 followers. I mean, 700,000 views. Got all the shares and reposts. But my productions page went from like 16,000 to sitting at like 26,000 now because so many people are following each day. Wow, so now when I post my new shows, I can just go and post and stuff because that led the way. So I know that works. So again, there are shows, there are movies, there are different types of content that with gay-led actors, it would still be powerful. It's just about positioning and about where you position everybody at, because you can, it don't have to be all gay people. You can have the mom straight, the sisters, the two sisters, they got the kids are straight, their boyfriends are straight, the people, you know what I'm saying, but the main character who brings the vibe and the nonsense, and my character is a former child star, so it makes it funnier, and it's given... it's a mockumentary, so it looks into the camera like Abbott Elementary.
I love that form of film.
And that's a good, like, that makes a lot of sense, that because when we think about queer movies, we think about you got to show the relationships or intimacy, and it really don't got to be none of that, because we literally are the queer aunties and uncles, and there's so much stuff that we experience just by being that. Me trying to give my nephew advice on how to treat a girl because he ain't got a father figure in his life, but I'm the gay aunt. Like, that's such a, like, that makes a lot of, like, for real. Think about it. So, like,
I love that.
Yeah, so it really is a lot of stuff we deal with outside of, like, our relationship. Right. So that's dope.
It'd be real life shit. And I don't like when they try to act like if we put it out there, it's going to teach somebody how to be gay.
That'd be
like on the gay agenda. My agenda is to show you what the real is.
Hello?
And how we intertwine in everyday life and why this is nothing new. That's my whole reason for what I do. It's nothing new. Like, you got brothers and sisters. Your brother, you may have a sister still. You may have a sister Sam. You may have a gay brother, cousin, nephew, and you don't treat them any differently. So when we portray things on television, you know, the consumption sometimes is, oh, this is too much. But it's depending on what type of content that you're putting out. If you're putting out, like, this is a family show. So, like, everybody knows that it's tuning in what you're getting into. And it's not in your face kissing or aggressive. It's just very much a family show. But it's like, I'm a gay Martin.
Yeah.
So think my mouth, but I'm gay. And it's just like, you know, you can't tell what's going to come out. And whatever I'm going to say is going to be drop dead funny.
Yeah.
Because the kids love you unconditionally. And at the end of the day, all of those things are stemming from the trauma that I had growing up as a black gay kid. And now as an adult, I'm not bound by those, which y'all used to hold me to in the 90s and the early 2000s. This is 2026, baby.
Hello.
Who are you talking to? You know, so, you know, that's where this is coming from in that narrative.
Okay, that's dope. All right, so we're going to wrap it up real soon. Let's get into some industry talk before we get you out of here, okay? So earlier you mentioned that you worked on B-Boy Blues with Jussie Smollett, and that's also your best friend.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so he's been at the center of a lot of public controversy over the past few years with the situation that happened where he was attacked, and there was a lot of back and forth about that. We don't have to really get into the specifics. But what has it been like for you watching someone close to you go through that, and how do you think situations like that impact someone's career in the way that public receives their work?
Well, because our relationship or our friendship doesn't rely on what he did. Mm-hmm. That was never anything for our friendship or anything that I ever looked at or I didn't even question. Even when we became really close, that was one of those things that, like, I read tabloids, I read all the things, but if my friend, you know, is going through certain things, I got my friends back regardless. So, like,
period.
That's just me. I'm that type of friend. So I don't care what the publicity, what the public says, what the magazines say, what the blogs say. That's my friend. If you got a problem, then you got a problem with me.
Period. I'm going to stick beside him. Mm-hmm. What are you talking about?
Period.
That's simple. So recently, Jules Solange's son, and Beyonce's nephew, y'all love to say that, right? Beyonce's nephew got some backlash for hosting a gay club. And actually, dang, it's two parts to it now. So he got booked to host a gay club, and a lot of people were giving backlash because he wasn't gay, all right?
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
No shade. They said it's allegedly.
But
the nigga fine. That's all I know.
But when he got booked, he didn't want to do any interviews that his team previously agreed that they would do.
Mm-hmm.
And he brought, and this is a male party, and he brought hella females with him. And I don't think he really participated too much. Like, he low-key was, like, in the middle of all the girls and, you know, was very secluded. So it didn't look like he showed love. Mm-hmm. I seen Gay Magazine posting, like, we can't just let anybody in and say that they're supporting the gays because they're getting booked. Right? Because he really wasn't even saying nothing. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that? And how do we in general feel about, like, I think we're all okay. Like, the gay community is okay with booking straight people. But how do we feel about people that say that they're allies but aren't really stepping up to the plate?
Well, again, I'm glad you asked me this question because I've been wanting to talk about this for a while.
Get it off your chest.
Yes. So, in our community, there are a plethora of celebrities, influencers, singers, rappers, actors, whatever you may be, that can most definitely highlight a pride night, highlight a stage. Mm. There are so many. Why do we always feel the need to book straights? If we know that this is gay pride and we know that we're expecting 50, 60,000 people coming, we're expecting this venue to pack out at least 5,000, 6,000 people, why are we booking straight people when we already know people are in town for gay pride? Having, and Lord, I love Trina. I love Trina so much.
I was just about to mention Trina.
Yeah, we do. I seen Trina.
Been headlining Pride since I was 20. I'm 40.
No, you ain't never lied. That girl get her
bad bitch.
She be like, I'm booked Pride season, okay?
Yes, but like, the whole Jewel situation, I blame the promoters because what has he done? Besides, has a cute face. When I look at him, that's a child to me. You know what I'm saying? Like, what has
21.
He done as an ally? Is he 21 or 19?
He's 21.
Okay.
Yep.
So as an ally, or I don't even know if he's an ally. I don't know too much about him. I just know that he models. He's B's, you know, Solange's daughter, Solange's son, and B's nephew.
Oh,
so
my shit.
Whole thing, and I was not being funny, but I'm just saying.
No, like, I get it. It's just funny to me.
But like, What does he have? What notoriety does he have to come to a gay event that's not even gay pride? Because there was nothing going on this weekend.
That's true.
So what is he doing here other than you think he's a cute face and you may think he's whatever. I blame the promoters because, one, why didn't you book? We all love Saucy Santana. Like, there's so many people that has so much following that could easily be booked. Like, why are we always dead set on allies or people who tend to show us, they give us our ass to kiss? Yes. And then with Gay Magazine wasn't contracted. They were just the team that was covering media for the event.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't really per se blame them. They were just doing what they were asked to come in and do.
Right.
And then when they said what they said to Gay Magazine, and he was like, oh, he's not doing any interviews, but he was already told that he was doing that per contract. So one, your contract's not airtight. Two, stop inviting people into our space. This is supposed to be a safe space, and if people can't, regardless of who they are, I don't care who they are, if they can't even respect us enough, and then after the fact, they're sending subliminals on all these platforms and saying more money and all these different things. Well, that's on y'all, because y'all had the opportunity to book so many people. And another thing is, the same promotion team that brought him in is the same promotion team that always overlooks their film directors and producers that are local, and they always bring people from out of town during Pride and they go to the Governor Ball and do all these things and give them all these awards. And here you are with people who have Emmy nominations, who are very prominent in Atlanta, who put all the people on, and you yet go out and get allies, people who are out of town, who are on the West Coast, who barely do YouTube shows, you know what I'm saying? Like, versus people who are actually putting out distribution and doing different things. Mm-hmm. I washed my hands a long time ago of the promotion team that actually booked. But what I would say is, you get what you deserve. And that's that what it is.
I love that perception, because the one point that you just said was kind of like, the promoters should do their research, mm-hmm. and hopefully they learn from this experience to understand the type of people that their crowd wants to see, and then just making sure they book people that do engage and do want to do the interviews and things like that. I think that's a very good point that I don't really feel like I saw with everybody talking. It was kind of just like on Jewels, and like, they were like mad at him more than anything, but I kind of see all sides. And then as a promoter, and we know the people that booked him as well, and what I will say is that sometimes people are really out of touch. Mm-hmm. You get what I'm saying? And it's so much going on. Even we sometimes are out of touch. Like, if I didn't probably see you somewhere, I might have never knew about you. But now that I know about you, now you're on my radar. Mm-hmm. So I kind of see both sides. And I've also, you know, us with being promoters, when we book people that are straight, for instance, like a Trina, right? Mm-hmm. So I've had situations with Trina where it's like her team did say she would do X, Y, and Z, but then when she got there, she was like, I'm not doing X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that's what happened with the whole interview and things like that, but
contracts, some airtight.
Sometimes them celebrities, they don't care about contracts neither, if I can be 100. Mm-hmm. You could literally have something in a plain sentence, and they will literally be like, no, and I'm not doing that.
And then when it's like that, you know, everybody that don't know this industry would be like, well, it's their contract. But what are you going to do? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like, some people don't care about what's in the
like
contract.
Like, if she don't do the interview, what? You not going to pay her? That ain't going to work. If you, maybe she wants her money
well,
before she walks in.
Well, if the contract is worth that, no, you don't pay her.
Oh, my bad. I don't want to cut you off. But I'm just thinking if Trina's at the door or Jules is at the door,
yeah,
if they want their money
they
before
they
walk
right
in,
there, yep.
I'm not. So all these people waiting on you, nobody cares.
Yeah, about an interview.
Yeah,
per
right
se.
Now, right now, right? They care, is she really coming or not,
yes.
right? And if she doesn't walk in that door because she doesn't give that interview which she agreed on, now you look like a janky-ass promoter, like, yo, why
yes.
you ain't pay her? Or why yeah. you ain't, they're going to have their own assumptions mm-hmm. and all that. So I get that, but we came across so much shit that, like, they don't stand by everything they agree to, and at some point it's and then what, we're gonna take you to court because you ain't do an interview? That's gonna cost more than anything, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
sometimes it don't make sense, you know. But I do think this taught me, like, this situation, and I never thought that deep about it, but mm-hmm. just because somebody takes the booking doesn't mean they're an ally,
right?
And we
that part.
And mm-hmm. as far as you saying why don't promoters like just book within the community, I agree, but I also know as a promoter, sometimes it ain't that many popping LGBT artists that maybe haven't came already so much. So maybe we want a new face or something.
Or they might be asking for stuff that don't make sense. Some people quote
now,
things
I didn't
for the
say his name earlier, but a rapper that I know, they did try to book him, but he was charging. Like,
they be taxing.
No,
they, it don't make sense. Baby, we
and that's another thing. That's another thing is that there's been so many art, and I'm talking about like we're very reasonable and we're not trying to, you know,
lowball nobody.
Yeah, but some stuff don't make sense. Where like, you're starting to book, not even like Nicki Minaj status, no, like, I don't even say that, Cardi B status, fuck Nicki right now, all right? You're not up there, but you're starting to buzz within the LGBT community, and now you're taxing us so much that it don't, like,
what do you
you're
20,000 for a walkthrough?
You're 20,000 and the club holds 600, you gotta do the math and be like, so either we're charging people damn near $75 to 100,
yep.
and the thing is, you can't explain this to the regular, like, just customer,
yep.
right? But you don't want to pay $75, but also we can't fit 1,000 people in here to make it make sense. So it is really crazy, because then it makes me think, like, if you're charging this much, it doesn't make sense for a regular promoter to bring you in unless they got a lot of sponsor
yeah.
dollars or whatever. It's like, do you want to be at these events, or do you not even want to be associated with gay shit? Does it lock you in a box sometimes? Because some LGBT artists is like, yo, if I get booked at too many prides, it's starting to make me lock me in a box or something.
Mm-hmm.
So it gets real sticky and all that.
Yeah.
But I do think, like, and then we could get to do some grace, because I'm sure he probably caught a lot of backlash on the back end where he came
oh,
in
yeah.
that door feeling like, damn, why did I take this booking or something? But if you're a cute boy,
yeah.
a cute guy, and you're getting booked by gay boys, what do you expect? What do you really expect? Like, men don't want to look at you
right, no,
at the minimum.
Well, yeah, but then you also got to look at, like, has he had bookings before? And also the age, like, coming into something like an allyship, something like that, even with, like, years ago, what's his name? Tyler Epley, that plays on the, like, the, he did, like,
about.
He came through when I came down to
he was
Atlanta.
On P-Valley.
Mm-hmm. He
yeah.
did a, not a walkthrough, but he actually was on the microphone and everything, and he was on,
the have and the have nots at the time. And this is like 2014, 15. And he didn't even give any of that. So it's all about being grown, being like, if you're going to take a book and take a book.
You have right. To don't come in here going. With your hood on, sitting down looking dumb.
And even that, if you do, like, I'm not doing no interviews. What? How you signed the contract? You didn't do no interviews. So yeah. The interview should have been done before he got, how he did the drop. He should have done the interview then before you get there. So when you get there, it don't, because even he was saying, I'm going to bring all these girls. It's just a club, blah, blah, blah. And you were seeing all these things after the fact, but I didn't know he brought all the girls there. He was sitting there. I didn't know any of this until I started seeing everything like play out on social media and everybody was saying the same thing. I blamed the promoters. I blamed, you know, y'all was, and then that like, they were calling him Trey. And it was like, see, that's the thing right there. Y'all already calling him Trey because of blah, 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 blah. So y'all were already like, fantasizing him, blah, 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 projecting the, you know, because he's a cute guy. It was just so many different things. For me, there was so many, I damn near would have booked Solange first off before I would have booked.
For real.
Dead ass.
And the whole promo be like Solange son, Beyonce nephew.
We should ask them, what made y'all pick him? Because I do think it was very random. I didn't even.
He's a cute like, face.
But it's like, how was that even on the radar? I don't know who they know and whatever, but I don't even know how his name came about. Like, do y'all want to book Jules?
Probably because of the fashion shows and the Fashion Week in New York. But even then, he didn't do anything that would say, hey, he's an ally for the, you know, let's bring him down. You may have just been, whatever the case, that your personal reason why you felt like you wanted to book him, he came in and he gave you his ass to kiss, and now you got to deal with the rollout.
Maybe they wanted to be the first to say we had a nose in the bill. I don't know. I got to ask them because we do know them, and maybe we should call them up and say, what made y'all book him out of everybody that you could have booked? Because I do
out
see
of
all
everybody that you could have booked on a regular week. There was nothing going on last week. There was literally not even St. Patrick's Day. It was nothing going on. Like, so I'm trying to understand what you were bringing somebody in March for, like, of that caliber to do what?
Though? Maybe he was very affordable.
Why would you be that affordable and you're a nose? See, I got so many questions. I need to speak with the promoters because I just need
I'm just saying, the real thought process. The only thing could think, if I was a promoter, I would think, cute face, maybe he's affordable, new face hasn't been out here like that. People love Beyonce, people love.
And also, that crowd that booked him, their age bracket is 18 to 25. So you wouldn't see anyone past 30, you know, at those events. And that's just because, so I'm guessing, and I still don't see, there could have, you know, I'm not going to say his name, but there still could have been, you know, we had a gay rapper, we had two gay rappers that could have most definitely done it. We could have done so many different people. There's studs, there's rappers, there's so many
there's
people
studs.
That could have done anything, but you chose someone who don't even have bookings behind their resume.
Yeah, nah, that's a fact. I mean, I think it's a lesson learned. And sometimes as promoters, sometimes we can't predict. I'm going to give them grace on that. You can't predict
grace.
It, but it is a lesson learned.
Yeah, don't do it again.
Period.
But with y'all, but don't let that shit happen again. Now you got us up and up.
All right, look, Corey, we definitely appreciate you. I think you shine a lot of light on, like, the film industry within, like, the LGBT. And,
yes.
And it's so hard to find a good film. Let us know, like, if you ever, I know you do a lot of male stuff.
No, I'm into a lot of stuff. Like, I'm actually, to be honest, last year was my last year just doing all black LGBTQ. I'm open to everything now.
Okay.
Like, family dramas. I'm not tying myself into a box. The only reason why I was doing black LGBTQ, there was no representation.
Right.
Okay. Now we have representation. There's a whole, like, that's all I'd ever do. So now I want to do other stuff too, to show them that I'm not just one dimension.
Right. I would love to see that gay uncle role though. Don't scratch that one. Okay. All right. So before we close out, we do a Patreon exclusive topic for, we have different tiers on Patreon. So this is for the gay bees and the family tier. All right. So anybody listening, thank y'all for being a part of our tier. If you're not, if this gets cut out, y'all gotta join us, all right? All right, so here's the question. There's always been an ongoing conversation in the community about whether men can truly be bisexual or not. And recently, he like, I'm happy you asked me this question. I actually been wanting to talk about this. All right, so recently, Jessica White added to the conversation by saying she doesn't believe men can be bisexual. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think bisexual men are fully accepted in the queer community, or do you feel like they're still getting judged? This is a new segment for our Gabies and family tier on Patreon. This is the after show bonus clips. Make sure you become a Gabies or a family tier member to watch this bonus clip. But thank you to all of our Patreon members. We greatly appreciate you.
It be like that.
Yeah, well, Corey, like,
thank you so much for coming up here. We're sponsored by Shop Starship, and we have a gift for you today. Gabies, if y'all are watching, I know you can get 10% off with our code HOMO SHOW. This right here, Corey, is the peanut vibe. Now, I picked this out because I feel like, you know, the boys, and I think this goes in your behind or something, or maybe going to other
wherever
behind.
Wherever you want it.
Wherever you want to go. But it's called the peanut vibe. It got different functions, different vibrations, pulsations. Escalations. So you can have some fun with this. We want to get this for you here today. I know this was a semi-fun conversation. We're going to end it real kinky, but this is for you. Enjoy
Thank
this peanut.
So
and it's like, it's called the On My Mind. It's from Starship. It's like one of one collection. So you getting some
exclusive stuff. Look at the peanut.
I'm going to try to use it tonight and tell you how it was.
All right. Tonight is crazy.
Damn, you ain't waste no time.
We're going to get this for you here today. Gabies, check out shopstarship.com.
All right. Yeah. Thank you, Corey.
So much,
Corey.
We appreciate you.
Thank y'all so much.
It's the normal show.
Whole lot of gay shit. Whole lot of gay. I like that. Boss Rich. We certified. And DJ XL.